I give y'all first speaker, Joyce.
Hi, group. I'm Joyce, and I'm an addict. And I'm glad to be here. I was feeling really nervous because that's how God works in my spirit. When I'm about to talk about me and get naked and tell the truth. And it's very, very uncomfortable. But I'm learning how to deal with it still. You know, it's my process. And this Ocean City, I remember when I used to come to East Coast conventions. And now it's Ocean City. And I've spoken at a lot of workshops, but I've never spoke at Ocean City. And I believe it's because I wasn't ready. You know, I was asked a lot, but I was always in a storm. You know, I'm in one now, you know, but it's all right. You know what I mean? It's all right. Today I'm supposed to be talking about our primary purpose. And I was taught that I need to qualify first. And I'm an addict. I do everything that addicts do today, okay? I recover a day at a time. All I have is right now, today, just for today, you know. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in 83, but I just couldn't stay here, you know. It was just too culty. It was like a cult to me. And I was using PCP and all that, so that probably had something to do with it, you know what I mean? So my mind was just like gone, and every time I would go up Howard to the meetings in that real little room, it was a teeny weeny room, and they had all these addicts in there. I would come late, and I'd leave early because I really, really didn't want the program. You know, I was only doing it because my mother told me that I had a problem, something was wrong with my life, you know, and I said, okay, I'm going to do this because she thinks something wrong with me. I've always did what she thought I should do. You know, growing up, my oldest brother is blind, and he went blind at 10 years old. So my mother's, all of her attention went to this child who was sick, and I was the only girl, and I have two other brothers. So I felt like an alien. I felt unwanted, unloved. This woman was the same sex as I was, but she was giving all this attention to this child. Mind you, the child was sick, but as a child, I never really could connect that, you know, and I've learned that over the process. That's my experience. Since being here, I've gotten in touch with that. And I was like, you know, I'm going to do this for her because I owe her, you know. I've done so much, I'm going to do this. And boy, I could not stay there. I left, I sat there for maybe 30 days, went back to my business in the street, you know, and I did that for 5 years after being introduced to the program. I was just around the program, you know, and because I just wasn't ready to do that. I was like, I'm young, you know, I was like 25 or something. You know, I was like, these people are old, they should stop using, you know. I was like, they should stop. I'm young, this is my life, I can do what I want. But the reality was, I was sick spiritually. I was emotionally sick, physically sick, I was so little. You know, and people tell me now, oh, you gained weight, you look good. But the reality, if you would have saw me when I came here, I looked like death. My brother said if he blow on me, I'd fall down. You know, I was unhealthy, I was weak, I was bent over, and I wanted a new way of life. You know, Tina T used to come to the psych ward at Howard University. That's where I was. I was always on psych wards. You know, I was in St. Elizabeth, too. Okay, I stayed there almost 2 years. But I was on the psych ward, and Tina T brought the message, and the message was what attracted me, that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, when I heard that, I said, it must be some hope for me, you know? And then she was coming back, bringing the different speakers. I guess, it was H&I. She was bringing different speakers. Every time I go out and come back to the psych ward, she was still there. And I was like, something must be magical about this, you know what I mean? And finally, you know, I was able to be taken from that psych ward to St. Elizabeth. You know, my feet never hit the pavement. I went in there. They was encountering people. Take position. Sit up. This, that. And it was people from jail. And I wasn't court stipulated, but I needed help. So I stayed there to the best of my ability. I packed every week. Every week, I'm leaving. You know, because I didn't want to face me. I didn't want to face the pain. I didn't want to look at the fact that I was always alone. I was an isolator. I ain't like myself. You know, I was molested as a child in school. I was like, I don't even want to talk about all that stuff. You know, the bottom line is I just want what they got. So I had to do what they did. So I went to St. Elizabeth, and I stayed in there. I surrendered. H and I came there, different people. I saw people I knew. I started to see people I knew bring the message, and I surrendered. I don't know when, where, and how, but I surrendered, and I took suggestions. It was this girl in my life used to come to visit me named Yvette. You know, she has passed on, but she was a power of example in my life. You know, she said, you come out of here, I'm going to help you. I'm going to let you stay with me for $1 a day. Okay, all I want you to do is get a job and do what I do. And I took the suggestion and I did it, and I haven't looked back since. That was 1986. Okay, a lot of stuff has happened. My father died when I was 2 years clean. My brother died 2 years ago. I got married in 90. I got divorced in 01. And, you know, it's just been so much going on, you know. But the solution is what I try to stay in, because I know that the message don't change. My primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Some days I'm that addict, and I have to come in here and let y'all tell me what the message is, because I don't know the message, you know. What I'm learning is just because I've been here a while don't mean that I don't need what y'all need. Coming in a day clean, 30 days clean, I still need that same type of love, the empathy, all the sharing and the caring. I need that, you know. The message doesn't change, you know. Groups don't recover. Groups are not addicted. What I've learned, because I've been in a lot of service since I came here, when I was new here, I was on the helpline. That was my first service work. I did the helpline, and I enjoyed it, calling people back when they called with their issues, calling them back, telling them about Narcotics Anonymous. I was on fire for Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And then I moved up to the group level, and I started doing the secretary. I made coffee. I was a GSR. I went to the area. I became the vice chair of the area. I chaired the area. Then I went to the convention level. I chaired the convention. That's what the program did for me, okay? Because I allowed myself to get in the middle, you know? Because, I mean, when I came here, it was powerhouse women, Carmelita, Doreen, and they wasn't, you know, they were stern. They'd tell you what you had to do. This is what you do. And you ain't ask no questions. I didn't. I was scared to death. I was like, I just want to be clean. Whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. Okay, I want you to sit on the front row. So when some friends of mine came in and one of my sponsees, I was pointing to the front row. I do what they do. And a lot of times, and I talk like they talk, you know, and a lot of times it don't go across well because they don't do that today, you know. They give people, you know, they baby them and, you know, tell them, you know, all that. They ain't tell me all that. When I came here, they said, sit down, shut up. You don't have anything to talk about. I couldn't talk for a whole year. They said, what are you going to talk about, you know. So when I go to meetings, you know, in the meeting with, I don't hear or see, if I'm not feeling the atmosphere of recovery, I get annoyed. you know, when it's subgrouping going on and all that, because I ain't get it like that. But I'm trying to condition myself to stay open like a parachute. That's what Pi used to tell me. Just stay open. Stay open like a parachute, you know. So I try to stay open and let people be who they are, you know. And eventually, they'll be up here sharing what I'm sharing, you know, and how they feel about it. But it's important that the message remain the same all the time. Because if I start coming in meetings telling you all this stuff I do, because I'm into yoga, I'm into all this crazy, a lot of stuff, you know. I'm a runner, I ran a marathon. If I start talking about that and being a social worker and all that kind of stuff, the message is going to be clouded. The newcomer is not going to hear that any addict, okay, can be free of drugs and find a new way to live. They're not going to get that message. They're going to get the message that I'm talking about life. That's life on life's terms. You know what I'm saying? I'm bringing all that other stuff into Narcotics Anonymous. So I get annoyed when people start preaching in meetings and all that, but I'm another addict who has an opinion. You know what I mean? So I just sit there and take it and do what I got to do to get through, you know. The program is awesome. I have come a long way in this program. Like I said, I was married. I've been through a divorce, and it hasn't been really easy, you know, because it was so much involved. I was with the person so long, almost all of my clean time, you know what I'm saying? And then I had to, like, start my life over. It was tragic for me. That was trauma, you know, to be meeting people and stuff. I was a sheltered wife. I ain't do nothing. You know, I was trying to just cook, clean up, go to grocery store, you know, and all that housey stuff. I loved it. But I was forced to do some work. I didn't want to do it. Fear had gripped me. You know, I ain't want to do that work, but I did that work. I'm here to report. It's all right, you know. It's all right. A child was born out of that. I met the child in a meeting 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was feeling all kind of stuff, but I embraced the pain. I hugged the child because I know that the child is innocent. She don't have nothing to do with that, you know. And that's because the program is in me. And I like what William P. said like last night. He said, when that piece get down in there where the dope used to be. Baby, when he said that, I was like, right on, because I'm right there. That kind of piece, you can't buy it. I can go shopping and buy 100 million things. It ain't going to do nothing. It ain't going to fill the void, you know. So, you know, I was telling Mike when I came that I was nervous. He was looking at me like I was crazy. You know what I'm saying? He go, you ever did this before? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, addict, I wanted to go on him, you know, because I go crazy sometimes. And I was like, breathe, because I, you know, I could practice some stuff here. So I was breathing. Then, God, no, I haven't seen it in a long time. He was talking all to me about his life and stuff. And I was like, if he only knew how these butterflies are flying around in my stomach, you know. But it's good to know that I could be amongst friends, you know, and be all right with where I am in my program, you know. And if it wasn't for y'all, I wouldn't be here. You know, I would not be here talking about the primary purpose of Narcotics Anonymous, because I know I suffer some days when I don't want to do what the program say do, when I want to do my will, when I just want to do my will. I don't want to do what y'all say do. I don't want to go to a meeting, but I have to go anyway, my sponsor says, still today, and I take suggestions. I might not do it right then, and I do go back and forth with my sponsor. She's been in my life, and she understands me, and I understand her, and we go back and forth about this thing. Some days, I don't want to. You know, it's like, I've been doing this. Why I got to keep doing this, you know? But if I don't do that, I might end up back on that corner of 7th and O at the Giant, sitting on the curb. That was my last run. And Paul Funny His apartment was across the street, and I was always begging him to give me something to eat. You know, so I know that the message is hope, and the promise is freedom. But you got to do the work to get free. And a lot of times, the price is high. You got to give up some stuff, you know. I had to give up some stuff to be able to be here talking about a little bit of freedom. Because I ain't free all the time. Freedom is not free. You know, it's a price you got to pay. It's a lot of work. And I do step work. I mean, I'm like, I just doing all these different things to keep my self-esteem up. Because once my self-esteem is lowered, I'm gonna get depressed. You know, and I ain't gonna want to move. I know that about me because you all have given me that. You all have allowed me to get to know Joyce, and it's okay to come to one of the members of Narcotics Anonymous and say, this is where I am today. You know, I'm not feeling this today. And the members of Narcotics Anonymous make up the program. You know, it's no individual person that runs Narcotics Anonymous. And thank God. Thank God that it's not, that I don't have to depend on one person. And I know that it's a God that reigns supreme in all this, you know, all of it. And that's what I'm so forever grateful for. And I hope that the new person have heard something that could help you to keep coming back, because the program does work, and our primary purpose is to stay clean and carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Dreams do come through. Thanks for letting me share.
Might have been nervous, but she warmed up there, huh? Beautiful message, powerful message. Ellie Momo, that Hinkley and that butt naked boy, I needed to hear that this morning. Yes, sir. I give you our next speaker, Mike.
Her family named Mike, and my addict.
Hey, Mike.
And when I came in, I was okay. I thought it was okay. And then I met Joyce, and she was so nervous. I was trying to calm her down. She made me nervous. You know, I really enjoyed everything that she had to say. I told her to go a few more minutes. I could just sit there and just listen to her. She covered so much in talking about this particular topic. And she said so many things that that I can identify with. First of all, I'd like to thank CPRC NA19 for putting on this convention in the East of the River area, for taking on the task of putting this on. This event is an example of us furthering our message of recovery and furthering our primary purpose. A lot of work go into putting on one of these things, and if you ever been involved with one, you would know the commitment that it takes to make all this happen. And I truly appreciate the work that they do, and I always get honors to committees and stuff like that when they get involved, because that's what our primary purpose is all about, getting involved and doing things like that. Joyce was saying that a lot of the things that I could identify with as far as my story, and I was thinking about when I first got here, what my primary purpose was. And my primary purpose before I got here was to get as much drugs as I could, you know what I mean? And my thing was, you know, I always wanted the smoker choker, always wanted the best of whatever. And that was my primary purpose. You know, I wanted to find ways and means to get more, it says in our literature. And I just used till I was crazy. And when I got in this program, I was more dead than alive, and a lot of pain, real frustrated. Didn't know what had happened to an intellectual guy like myself, because I thought I was too smart for the disease to affect me the way that it did. You know, I thought I could control it, you know. And when I came here, I didn't really want to stop. I just wanted to just learn how to control it on the weekends, you know, or special occasions, special events and things like that. But when I got here, they say, no such thing as that, Mike. You can't do that. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. And So I remember coming in, and I remember my first NA meeting when I was in this place I went to. I call it Institute of Higher Learning, but really it was Psychiatric Institute. It was a nut ward that I went to. And I was introduced to my first NA meeting in that facility. And in there, they had a meeting, and in the meeting, people were coming and sharing. They were sharing their experience, strength, and hopes. And I didn't know at that time that that was an H&I commitment, that it was a person with H&I that was coming and bringing the message of hope to people that was in treatment to let them know it was another way. The funny thing, when I was using it on the street, I never knew that it was another way to live. I had never heard of this program. And it was amazing of all the things that I learned when I was out there, but I never learned about this program. I never heard about the program of Narcotics Anonymous and how it could change your life. And so when I got in, I went into that meeting, and I heard people talking about that we do recover, that our lives change, and that we never have to use again. We never have to live like that again if we didn't want to, that it was hope available, that it was a new way to live. And I thank God for that time, for me being sick enough to have to stay long enough to hear what they were saying, because I didn't have anywhere else to go when I got here. I was fresh out of ideas. Everything I tried failed. And so I had to sit there to listen to what they were saying. And I stayed long enough to hear my story. Somebody shared my story, and I began to identify in with what they were saying, because that touched me deep down on inside, hearing that somebody else had went through what I had went through, and that helped me to begin this process of recovery. And so I started going to meetings and getting involved in service work and doing the things that people told me to do. And like Joyce mentioned, the early predecessors back then who helped set the stage for this recovery process for me, it was so important because I needed the guidance. I'm the type of person that I need guidance. I need structure in my life. Even today, if I don't have structure, you know, my mind is still out to get me. My mind will tell me some of the craziest things in the world if I listen to it long enough. You know, it still gets me like that, you know. So I need structure. I need something to follow. And they have set up a program of action for me to follow by going to meetings and getting involved in this program. And what they did was set an atmosphere of recovery for me. And it was good to be able to go into a meeting and people would tell me to come in, sit down, and they welcomed me. That was one of the most important things for me coming early, was that people welcomed me and they hugged me and they told me that it was going to be all right. Even though I wasn't feeling that way when I came in, because I was feeling so bad about myself, what I had turned out to be, what I had done as a result of using, all the people I had hurt and harm along the way. I wasn't feeling nothing good about me at all. I was really in a lot of shame and guilt because of the past that I had lived and the people I had hurt. And they would hold me and say, Mike, that it's okay. You know, everything was going to be okay. Just keep coming back. Keep coming back. And I didn't believe it, and I really wasn't feeling it. But like I say, I didn't have nowhere else to go. So I continued to just believe what they was believing. You know, I just stepped out on their faith. And as I continued to just do what they said to do, things started to change in my life. I thank God that they were talking about nothing but recovery. And I learned that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict that still suffer. I learned that the group had one primary purpose, and as an individual, we have another primary purpose. And like Joyce had mentioned earlier, that the group is not addicted to any drugs and alcohol. This building don't have to go to recovery. You know what I'm saying? The church don't have to go to recovery. A synagogue or treatment center, none of them places that we hold our meetings are addicted themselves. So their primary purpose is to provide an atmosphere of recovery for us. And that means that we go in there with one singleness of purpose, and that is to talk about the disease of addiction and how we can make our lives better. And if you were talking about anything other than that when I came here, I don't think I would have stayed, because I had tried a lot of other things, and what I needed more than anything else was to learn how to live life on life on terms. If you were talking about being educated, going to school, I wouldn't have stayed. You know what I'm saying? Let's just say that if we were doing that, that we would probably have a lot of educated addicts. But being educated and doing the things I do as an addict don't help me much. You know what I'm saying? It says that we was talking about making money. We can make a lot of money. We may have a lot of rich addicts. But having money and using, what is that? That's going to help me get killed quicker, because all this means I'm going to have more money to spend. That's all that means. So our primary purpose is to learn how to live alcohol and drug free one day at a time. And that's our primary purpose. We have to stay focused on that, not get deviated from that and get involved in a lot of things other than that, because these are the things that blur our message of recovery, you know, for the group itself. The group has to provide a stable environment, and I have been to meetings where the environment is not conducive to recovery. And a lot of times, newcomers may come into a meeting, and because of the activities that's taking place in that meeting, they may not stay, or they may not feel welcome, or they may not feel wanted, or they may not feel a part. And I have to be conscious and be aware of being socializing in the meeting, because a lot of times, I've been around for a while, and I know a lot of people. When I go to meetings, and I could easily get caught up with socializing with my friends and talking with them and getting involved with what's going on in their lives and my life, and forget and don't even see that addict that may sneak in the door that's feeling shame or feeling real bad or feeling low, or the court might send them there and they don't feel wanted, or they really don't feel a part of, and they might isolate and may not come back. So, you know, I have to be conscious of that person and be able to extend a hand or welcome them and tell them, you know, keep coming back. My name is Mike, and I'm an addict, and it's okay. Everything's going to be okay. Show them where the literature is and help them to meet people, introduce them to people and things like that. That's so important in helping us to continue to carry our message of recovery and sticking with our primary purpose, to be able to allow others to see how this program works, you know, and keeping that atmosphere of recovery is so important in the group structure. Also, I have been a part of groups where when certain people come into a group, members don't feel comfortable in sharing, because we as addicts still is not practicing all the principles, and because of the defects that's in our character, we want to judge others, or we won't allow people to freely share what they want to share. So they're coming to me and say, oh, well, Joe is in there, I ain't going to share today. You know. And I have seen that. I have seen people share things in the meeting, and it beat them home. Before they get home, somebody had called their house and told their wife what they had shared in the meeting. And this is a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And as a result of that, that person stopped coming to our fellowship because they didn't feel safe in sharing about what was going on with them. They couldn't free themselves with what was going on with them. And that thing hurt, because I knew him personally. He was a close personal friend of mine. But when someone did that to him, you know, it really, you know, was a negative mark on the fellowship. So we have a great responsibility to keep this singleness of purpose and to keep our atmosphere and our primary purpose at hand, and to make sure that we keep an atmosphere of recovery. You know what I'm saying? So people can get the help that's available to them, so I can continue to get the help that I need. Because I still need help on a daily basis. Even being around here as long as I have, I still need a lot of help, and I need to be in an environment where I feel free to share what's going on. You know, I don't have time for a lot of craziness. You know, when I'm in pain or when I'm hurting and I need help, I don't need no mess. I need someone that's going to be able to share deeply what's going on and down inside of them, or have done that or free enough to do that to give me my help. I can't give my own self my help. You know what I'm saying? Even today, I cannot, you know, give myself what I need. What I get come from y'all. And what y'all give me, I can give somebody else. But I can't give it to myself. And that's how I've been working in my recovery. So our singleness of purpose, our primary purpose as a group is to provide that structure so that we can have an atmosphere of recovery. Also, in the group, and it's a big thing going on in NA right now. If you paid any attention to the last two issues, and I think they're going to talk about on this third issue that's coming out in the NA Way magazine about the leadership in Narcotics Anonymous. Well, I just say we had no leaders, we had trusted service. But we do have, we do provide leadership in the form of trusted service. And as a result of that, what's happening is that a lot of our groups are not functioning well, or a lot of them is in a lot of need of support, simply because of the leadership that we as individuals place in these positions of leadership in our fellowship. You know what I'm saying? So what they're saying is that because of the people that we putting in these positions and we're not backing them, we're not supporting them, we show up to meetings late, the coffee not made, the chairs not set up, or a lot of times what's happening is that we leave a place worse than it was when we came in. And as a result of that, we send a negative message to the community about NA. And they see us and they see negative stuff because we won't clean up behind ourselves. You know, we throw cigarette butts all on the people's parking lot and whatnot. You know, and then the first thing we holler is we paying rent. You know, how are you paying rent? $10, $15 a month. Let somebody come stay at your house and give you that and tear up your place and see if you paying rent. You know what I'm saying? So we have a responsibility. And what it's saying that in these positions, we need to put qualified people or put people that's responsible, that have integrity, that have willingness, that is honest, that's committed to this new way of life and committed to the positions that they hold. If you're a GSR, then do the GSR things. Do the things that a GSR is supposed to do. Go to the area, bring the information back, bring group problems to the area and go back and forth so that you can have that dialogue, that communication. If you're a treasurer, make sure the treasurer books is correct, that the money is spent properly, that everything is accounted for, that you get a group report of what's going on with that money to keep yourself honest and to keep the group honest. If you're a chairperson, open the doors on time. Not on time, get to a meeting early and leave late. You know what I'm saying? And make sure the chair's there. If no trusted service is there, if nobody is there but you, then it's your responsibility to make sure that that group is structured right, that the chairs and the literature is set up, the readings is there, the coffee is there, whatever refreshments you have. It's your responsibility to set all that up until the people come in, and then you can have a group conscience and straighten up the things that you need to do. So in carrying our primary purpose, it's a great commitment that we have to make so that we can have that atmosphere of recovery. And like I said, if we were doing anything other than recovery in here, then I wouldn't be here. I would be somewhere else. And I need a place where I could come and get the help that I need, because sometimes life on term is too much. It become overwhelming for me. And I need to be around people like me. They say the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. Y'all know me more than I know myself. And that if the program wasn't here, I hate to think about where I would be. I know the program can do without me, but I can't do without the program. You know what I'm saying? I need the program. I need to be able to come to a convention like this and sit out like y'all sit and enjoy myself and knowing that everything's going to be all right. I need to go to my home group and know that things is going to be all right, that there's going to be someone there, that group is going to be there. Whether it's snowing outside, whether it's raining, whether it's a holiday. I've been to a meeting sometime and they say it's a holiday, the meeting closed. I'm saying meeting closed on a holiday. You know what I'm saying? What is that? You know, My disease ain't never took off. My disease worked hard on the holiday, you know. So if these kind of things, whether snowing, raining, or whatever, as a trusted servant of that group, you have to be there to provide that meeting and open that meeting up. And it's been times like that that I have really seen that, because I go to a meeting in that kind of situation, and somebody will always come and say that, dang, I'm glad this meeting is open. Mm-hmm. I need a meeting today. I need to share what was going on with me. You know, thank God the meeting is open, that someone's here. And it'd be a good meeting. It'd be a good meeting. Most meetings that's real good to me are usually small ones. Real people can get intimate and not get caught up in some of the things that's happening in our fellowship as meetings grow and meetings get real big. A lot of times we tend to lose our primary purpose because of the socializing and a lot of things, the cross-talking in groups and things like that. So, you know, it's vital for me, and I know it's vital for the fellowship itself, as to keep this group and to keep the purpose, our primary purpose of the group, intact. I'm going to talk a little bit about the individual part, because when you're looking at our primary purpose, it's mentioning a lot in our, when you look at the fifth tradition, and then also when you look at the 12th step, both are mentioned our primary purpose. And in our literature, which deals with the pamphlet, the group IP, also it's a booklet they call the group booklet, which help gives instructions of the responsibilities of our officers and our leaders. In this NA service structure. But as an individual, my primary purpose as an individual is to stay clean. And that's first and foremost. I must stay clean in order to carry a sufficient message of recovery. And what that does is that once I'm clean, then I'm able to live this program. And I find out that living this program gives it more meaning than anything else that I could ever say out my mouth. Because I learned that people really watch you more than anything else than what you say. They don't pay, I mean, they'll listen to some of the stuff you say, but they'll watch and see how you live in this program. Are you really trying to live this program? Which is difficult on a day-to-day basis. It's a day-to-day program, but sometimes it gets difficult. But we have to practice these principles in all our affairs and try to live this program more than anything else. And in doing that and carrying our primary purpose out and carrying the message of recovery out to the still suffering addict, our living gives it more meaning than anything else, you know. When I'm going to jails, institutions, or wherever I go in carrying the message of Narcotics Anonymous, I have to make sure that I'm living what I'm saying. I found out that if I'm not living what I'm saying, then the needed power is not there to be able to carry a sufficient message. You know, I could say and talk and come up with all kinds of things that I think people want to hear, but it won't make no sense. But when I'm living this, and then when I'm saying it, it gives it more power than anything else. And not only that, what people will do is they will not only hear what you're saying, but they'll see. They'll see, because it'll be some kind of change in you that'd be attractive. And that's what I say, the program is a program of attraction, because what'll happen is they'll be able to look and see that it's something different about you, it's something different about the way you're living, and they will feel that on the inside, and they'll gravitate to that kind of spirit because they know that you're trying to do the best you can. The message is a simple message. It's not complicated, even though we are people that are complicated. It's a simple message that an addict, any addict, could lose the desire to use, stop using, and find a brand new way to live. You know what I'm saying? And it's not a message that's for it's not just for a few people. It's for anybody, any addict, no matter what your status is, no matter where you come from, no matter what drug you use. The message is for you, that we never have to live that way again if we don't want to. You know, our lives can be remade. We can be made over again if we give this program a chance in our life, and we will be willing to come in and to stick to our primary purpose. Our primary purpose, what takes place is, for me, is that my primary purpose was to help me stay clean and carry this message. But in the process of that, it was for me to be able to get closer to the God of my understanding, who will make all this stuff possible for me. You know what I'm saying? So when I begin to get outside myself, the God of my understanding began to come into my life and help me to do what I couldn't do for myself. And then I could share with others what had happened to me, what my story was like, and how that has changed. Because a lot of things I did when I first got here, I don't do today. My life is a little different than how it was when I first came here. Hopeless, helpless, confused, purposeless, frustrated, and lost. Not even knowing what had happened to a guy like me. Because I never really wanted to be no addict, believe it or not. I wanted to do a lot of other things. That was the last thing on my mind that I wanted to be, was an addict and come to Narcotics Anonymous, drink coffee, smoke cigarettes, and all that stuff. No, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do some other things. But since being in here, my dreams have awakened. My life has been remade over again. And it's so important that we keep our foot in the door for the next newcomer that's coming behind us, so that they can have that same chance and opportunity to recover that we had, that people made possible for us. We have to make it possible for them too, not put a cut on what they need to hear or provide in that space and that atmosphere, so they can grow in the areas that they need to grow in and continue to carry this message of recovery to all those that are suffering in and out of these rooms. And a lot of times that message, like I said, is I need to hear it. I need to hear it more than anything else. And I take my recovery very, very seriously. I don't take myself too serious because I'm a clown. I like to joke and play and stuff like that. But when it comes to recovery and it comes to providing the atmosphere for the newcomer, I'm very protective because I know how it was and how important it is for a new person when they come in, because it's so hard. It took me almost 30 years to get to this program. It took me 30 years to get a one-day chip. And I know how hard it is to get here. And then once we get them here, then we have to provide the atmosphere to keep them here, because they don't really want to stay. They want to go. But if we give them that opportunity, provide a humbling atmosphere and not look down on them, but welcome them and make them feel a part of what we're doing, and to walk with them, introduce them to the sponsorship literature, help them find a sponsor, help them find a guide that can help them through this process. Once we begin to do all that stuff, then things begin to open up for them and continue to open up for us. So I think that's enough out of me, and I want to thank each and every one of y'all for showing up, and with that, I'm going to keep coming back.
We'd like to thank Joyce and Mike for sharing. At this time, we still have a meeting going on, you all. At this time, we'd like to open up the mic for anyone that'd like to come up and share. The workshop is not over till 10:15, so we have open mic at this time for anyone that'd like to come up and share. Before we open the meeting.